seen your new building down there in Philly. I used to go to Philadelphia two or three times a week when I was with DuPont over east during the war. I have fond memories of the area.
Oh, yeah. This is the oral history interview done with Mr. Dale Baker in Columbus, Ohio at the Chemical Abstract Service Headquarters, and today is June 9, 1997. Well, Mr. Baker, say we've got a lot of questions here, and so let's start at the beginning. We have you were born September 19, 1920, and I cannot pronounce the name of this town in Ohio. Bucharest, is that how you...
Bucyrus.
Bucyrus.
Bucky Russ, some people say. Bucky Russ was a beautiful Indian maiden, and she tried to save Colonel Crawford from burning at the stake. The stake was about 3 miles outside of town where I was born and raised, and she didn't save Colonel Crawford. The Seneca Indians burned him at the stake. He had brought in troops, just a small band, but she didn't save him.
Well, tell us about your parents and family background and early influences in high school, and particularly how you got oriented toward the chemistry field.
Well, if you want to go back to 1639, my father's side, Baker, left from northern England above York, just up near the cotton border. We went to Amsterdam to catch a boat to America, and they landed over in New York area. My mother was a German. She was born and raised in, well, here in America, but her family came from the New Brunswick area. They were kicked out of Long Island in New York for not paying their taxes, and they came east and settled up in northern Ohio up near Fort Seneca. My grandfather was in the Civil War, and he was a captain. His dad owned a grist mill up there in Fort Seneca. The Indians would come and grind their corn at his grist mill. It was along one of the rivers up there. My grandfather had a big pair of dapple gray horses, and he had a gold watch fob, and he had a long beard. I've got pictures of him. He was quite a gentleman when he rode those horses down through. He got started in the lumber business, my father did, and was hired by a man who bent wagon rims to run the factory there. And he met my mother then, who was a domestic in a family near Bucyrus. And they got married, and he went to Bucyrus then to set up a big plant. And it was owned by a widower, John McCormick. He roomed with my mother, my grandmother, at their house on Hopley Avenue, and he was died and had no heirs, and so the factory was in receivership for 3 or 4 years. And my father worked, this was the late 20s, he worked at a rubber company, Swan Rubber Company, to get enough money to start the shop under his ownership. I, as a little boy, helped my father. We would husk corn for a dollar a day, the two of us, back in the Depression years, to set up this factory. My father was a self made man. He studied his civil engineering and his mechanical engineering out of books that he had sent away for, bought on the open market. And so he inspired three sons. The oldest son became a ceramic engineer, Donald, and middle son, Lloyd, was a mechanical engineer, and I was a chemical engineer. My father inspired us, I'm sure, to be studying engineering, and offered to help pay for our college education. He never offered the three girls in the family to help them, but he said if you ever need money, he would be glad to loan us money to get through college, and he did. I borrowed about $400, I think. The total cost of my bachelor's degree was $1,800. And what really inspired me into chemistry and chemical engineering was our high school teacher, and also he was my Sunday school teacher. Toby Roberts was his name, and Toby was our Sunday school teacher as well as our chemistry and biology teacher at Bizarre's High. A wonderful man, and he was like a second father to me. And he inspired me to study chemistry in college, and I enjoyed it so much, and he knew it, and I went on to become a chemical engineer. I think those are the two main people who influenced my life, early history, to become in chemistry.
Now, with your father, what kind of formal education did he have?
Nothing more than the ninth grade. But he was a self-made man. He studied engineering books of the time.
He would send off for these books and get them back and study them.
A whole series of books.
And he was running what kind of business at the time?
He had been in the bending work business under this man, McCormick. But he had to work at the Swan Rubber Company as a civil engineer in Bizarre's to get enough money to buy the business to start it up again. It had been in receivership and hadn't been operating for over three or four years.
So chemistry, why not biology? There seemed to be a bigger market in the chemistry thing, or just more fascination to you?
I would think that it was more chemistry and chemical engineering because of money. Basically, I wanted to get into medicine and going to become an MD after high school. And then, realistically, the 8 years of college education required, it didn't appear to be feasible at the time, and therefore I chose to go into chemical engineering. I really enjoyed all the lab work that I had done up at Bizarre's. We had a nice chem lab, and it excited me, and it was challenging to me. There's no question that I enjoyed it. I didn't go into medicine, but I would have liked to. Couldn't see it. I could afford it.
And why OSU?
I had a sister, and that's the reason why we're sitting here right now. Older sister, Gretchen, that had come to Columbus in 1928, and she was studying at the secretarial school downtown, and she heard of Dr. Crane, who was my predecessor here at Chemical Abstracts, needing a young lady to help at their home. And so she took up that job of living and working for Dr. Crane and gone to school. And then after she graduated from school here, She took up a job at Chemical Abstracts, and that was my first introduction to Chemical Abstracts back in 1928, when my sister Gretchen asked us to come down and visit her in the offices of Chemical Abstracts.
So your connection goes really, I was amazed at 40 years, now it goes back even further.
Yeah. My other sister, Joan, then came down to Columbus, and she worked at Chemical Abstracts, and both of them met their husbands here at Chemical Abstracts. It was over in the chemistry building on the top floor then, the offices, and Dr. E.R. Lang, who was with Roman Haas for 40 or 50 years, had all the patents on plexiglass. He was the inventor of plexiglass, and he had over 160 patents with Roman Haas on plexiglass that developed in 42 during World War II. And he was into methyl methacrylates and ultra-high centrifuges, and that was a very close relationship between my sister and him. My oldest sister then married a chemist, Dr. E.R., or M.T. Moreland, Marion Thaddeus Moreland. He went on to study, after his degree in chemistry, he went on to become an M.D. just before World War II, and was sent over to Europe as an M.D. They had been stationed at Fort Ord, so they moved back to, after the war, to Oregon, and where he practiced MD for many years.
Well, now, you worked at Chemical Abstracts while you were in school here, too.
I started here at Chemical Abstracts in 1938 at 15 cents an hour as an office boy. And as an office boy, you got to run the mail. Get the mail, you get to run journals. Each of the editors has need for a particular scientific publication or a paper to do the abstracting and indexing. And so as an office boy, I would, when the editors would put up a little slip calling for a certain journal article, I would have to go to the library and pick it up and then return it. Assuming that it was in the stacks and in the library, a lot of times they were out to abstractors or we couldn't find them. But in the process, you see, the most interesting was that I got a chance to read all these scientific chemical journals. I could read the Cyrillic, the Russian, there's 154 languages that we used. I couldn't read the Japanese at all. I couldn't read the structure formulas and structures in the formulas, but not the text at all. I did learn my scientific journals, Helvetica, Chimica, Octa, the Swiss journal, one of the biggest and best. But all the chemical journals of the world I got very familiar with during my office boy days at Chem Abstracts.
And you did this for 4 years, basically,
yeah.
Then, huh?
After I graduated, I went with DuPont over East to Wilmington.
Yeah. You finished in 42, right?
Right.
And then went to work immediately for DuPont.
Yes.
I was a little surprised that you didn't immediately get drafted or something into the military.
That's a good question. And I had been offered advanced ROTs here at the university and signed up for it. When my boss, then Dr. Crane, talked to me about working more at Chem Abstracts, helping out, and I decided to do that, even though we would have been paid by ROTC for advanced training. I did, upon graduation, go to DuPont. I had 11 or 12 job offers, different kinds of jobs, as you well know. During the early part of the war, there was a great demand on chemists and chemical engineers, and And DuPont was the one that I chose as being the best of all my offers. And I was thinking it would be just an interim thing until the draft, or I would go into the military. I had a lot of friends go in. At DuPont, I trained for 6 months at their Eastern Research Laboratories, and they sent me up to Fountain Lakes, New Jersey, Special Products Division, to create and invent a lot of new chemical explosives, high explosives compounds we developed during the early part of the war. A lot of new high explosives that were used and called for by the Office of Technical Services of the military defense. And I got involved in the fulminates and the azides, which are the super sensitive explosions. You look cross-eyed at some of those compounds and they'd go off on you. And my ears still ring from some of the explosions. I blew my eardrums, both of them. I got glass in my chest and my arms, yet from those days. And we developed new specifications for some of the RDX and Tetrals that we developed during World War II. Tetral was used in the torpedoes, and RDX was used for blowing up bridges, and we got into high altitude, 40,000 feet explosive materials that would blow up airplanes. And then one of the things we developed was explosive rivets. If a plane gets shot up and you want to fix it in the field rather than send it back to the factory, you had to have equipment to fix an airplane in the field. What we did was get these little different boxes of explosive rivets. There's a little charge in about 3 or 4 millimeters at the end of this explosive rivet, and you drill the hole into the aluminum, you put your explosive rivet in there, and you get a hot gun, hot, you know, electric gun or whatever, and it would explode, and then that would seal that plane so that you could have it flying the next day. This is especially useful over in the Pacific area where you're out on an island. And I had a lot of explosions, my right ear, and I had taken my Navy commission right at the Naval Shipyards in Philadelphia. I got a 99.8 on my exam for my Navy commission. That was in 1942. And I was waiting for my Navy commission, and the darn DuPont people went to Congress and to the Office of Technical Services of Defense Department, and they said that this man cannot go. And then I still have some of the draft cards back then. When I got into my explosions and blew my eardrums, and I got a 4F rating, so that they didn't want me anymore in the military. But I wished I would have had one of the things I regret now that perhaps I should have done differently was that I would have taken my commission in the Army or Navy earlier. Back in high school, the president of the Second National Bank, Casares, offered me to send me to military school there, right north of Washington, D.C., in between Washington and Philadelphia.
Annapolis?
West Point.
That's in New York.
West Point. Annapolis.
That's Navy.
Yeah, that's Navy. He offered to get an appointment for me in Annapolis.
And you So this was the kind of work you were supervising at DuPont, all related to defense work then?
All related to defense work. When I went to DuPont and training at the Eastern Research Labs, we were training and training supervisor and training for chemical research and development. Special products division, we called it. DuPont had, I believe, 9 divisions at the time, but I was in the special products division. This was high explosive division.
And so after the war, then why did you come back to Chem Abstracts?
That's a even better question. I started at DuPont laboratories for DuPont, particularly up in Minnesota, Gopher. We trained over 1,000 chemists to make high explosives, and we were calling for more explosive materials, especially powders, and we would work 30 days straight, two shifts, 7 to 4 and 4 to 11, 2 shifts straight we had to work to get out high explosives or materials powder, where I concentrated during that part of the war. And I shut down the laboratories up there at the end of the war, and they offered me to go back east, primarily to work at the Eastern Research Laboratories. And I had an urge to go on to get advanced chemical degrees, and I decided not to take then that going back east to DuPont, to come back to Ohio State and to do my advanced graduate work. Contact with Dr. Crane at the time, and he said, sure, come on back, and he would hire me, and I could go on to school and work and get my graduate degrees, which I did. It was probably as much a desire to get higher education than anything else. I could have, you know, I had saved some money, so it wasn't really money that was a problem then. It was more than I had a curiosity mind. Dr. Crane used to say that I had a curiosity mind. Anyhow, I did that, then got my master's degree here working for Dr. Crane and Chem Abstracts.
So you were going to school part-time and working full-time here?
Pretty much, yes. 40-hour. I'd get a 40-hour work weekend for Crane. Yes. Part-time at school. Took me, 6 quarters. Yeah, 247, 46 and 47.
To get the master's in chemistry.
After I got my master's, DuPont contacted me again. One of the interviewers, personnel, came to the office, I'll never forget, and he wanted me to come back, and he offered a job in the intelligence division at DuPont. You may not understand what intelligence division is at DuPont. It's a division at Wilmington, at the Eastern Research Labs, of which you analyze and go out and see what your competition is doing in the field of chemistry. You would seek secrets from the other companies and what their, not only patents, but also at national meetings, you would listen to the people reporting on different research and bring it back to the company and make decisions on what DuPont's strategy was going to be for the next years. This intelligence division was, well, one of the best offers I think I ever had in my life was to come back and work at the intelligence division at DuPont in 1948. I had accepted the job in 1948 at DuPont's Intelligence Division when Dr. Crane got a hold of me I was a little unhappy that I hadn't been doing more work, creative work here at Chem Abstracts. And he said to me, if I don't take that job, and he twisted my wrist pretty hard not to go back, that he would offer me an assistant editorship, and I would be responsible for building new buildings. We were getting tight on space at the office. We were in the fourth floor of the chemistry building at LSU, and as you might imagine, after the war, it was a really humming place, and so we didn't have enough room in Chem Abstracts in the office that we had on the fourth floor. And so he wanted to build a new building, and he said he would make me responsible for not only the design development, but getting the money to finance a new building. So that was a challenge for me, and I decided he would. Dr. Crane was a very persuasive man, as you know some people can be, and he certainly was. He persuaded me not to accept the position that I'd been offered back at DuPont. Mm-hmm.
He must have been an interesting fellow, because he'd been around here for a long time himself, hadn't he?
He was a graduate in 1911 of chemistry, and he took his only job at Chem Abstracts in 1911 after he got his bachelor's. And at the time, Dr. Austin Patterson was the editor, and Dr. Crane went to work for Austin Patterson.
Do we need to stop, Leroy?
I think we're going to switch over.
Okay, if we can just switch over.